we tend to over analyze ourselves. So it's a great exercise just to say, okay, I have to write 5 minutes in 5 hours, go. And then do that, and then the next day come in with fresh ears and take a listen, and you'll be surprised at how good it sounds. Just because you weren't judging your work, you were just doing your work.
Welcome to Freedom Matters, where we explore the intersection of technology, productivity, and digital well-being. I'm your host, Geordie Powell, and each episode we'll be talking to experts in productivity and digital wellness. We'll be sharing their personal stories and experience on how to take back control of technology. We hope you leave feeling inspired, so let's get to it. Hi everyone. So firstly, apologies that we haven't shared a new episode for a while. We got hit by COVID and it rather took the wind out of our sails. For anyone else who's had to go through it, we feel for you. And for everybody who is still wrestling with working and staying productive in such uncertain times, we're thinking of you too. This week, we're sharing with you a conversation that we had a while back now with top composer Jack Wall. It's a bit different to usual, as Jack isn't an expert in the future of work or our relationships with technology, but he is a master at what he does and has developed a ruthlessly efficient approach to work, which has seen him prosper over the past few decades. Jack is known for his epic scores for dozens of leading video games, including Mass Effect, Myst, and most notably Call of Duty, the largest interactive entertainment property in the world. Throughout the episode, the music you will hear is from Call of Duty Black Ops Cold War, which Jack composed and recorded in the midst of a pandemic in 2020. A multi-time BAFTA and ASCAP Award nominee, he writes for the supernatural drama TV series Shadowhunters, The Mortal Instruments on Disney, and for numerous other series. The vast palette of his music ranges from dramatic and menacing to heartbreaking and poignant, and can evoke fantastic or futuristic landscapes and bring life to scenes ranging from tender to brutal. With such a diverse background and an in-demand professional life, we were eager to talk with Jack about how he approaches work, how he meets deadlines and balances life while creating new music and managing such high-stakes projects. So the first thing I need to do is to say, Jack Wall, thank you so much for joining us this week on Freedom Matters. It's really exciting to have you as a guest on the podcast today.
Thank you, Georgie. Thanks for having me.
So Jack, perhaps you could just start by giving us a bit of an overview of your role, your job, and what gets you up in the morning.
Well, yeah, I'm a composer for media, that is to say film, television, video games, primarily known for video games, but also I've done a bit of television and some film. What gets me excited every day is the challenge of telling a story through music. I think storytelling is one of the most, common ways of communicating ideas that otherwise wouldn't be communicated. You know, we've been storytellers as human beings since we've been human beings.
When you're telling the stories with the music, do you kind of aim for a product which, if you just listen to the music, you could know the story, or is it very much symbiotic with the visuals?
I think it's really symbiotic with the visuals. It's sort of a way of enhancing the overall ideas that are being put forth in whatever I happen to be writing for. I actually like writing for media more than I like just writing music itself. I love music and I love listening to other people's just for music's sake. But when I'm writing, it's just more exciting for me to do collaboration with a visual, some sort of a visual aspect, whether it's a writer for a television show or a game designer for a game or director for a film. It's just always really satisfying to do that collaboration and see what comes out the other side. It always feels like 1 + 1 equals more than 2 in that scenario.
Nice, you've got that richness of the audio and the visual together. So I know that you've been working on the music for the Call of Duty games for quite some years now. Could you just explain to everyone, from the day you get the call that says, we'd like you to be composing music for Call of Duty, for the latest series, how do you go about that? What's the process? How do you manage your mind? How do you create that music?
That's a really excellent, timely question for me because I'm just starting a new project right now. that is going through that very production pathway. I start out with, please give me everything you can that has anything to do with this game or television show. Give me the scripts, give me the summary of the flow through the game or whatever it is. And right now I'm reading design documents for this game level that I'm going to be scoring. And once I get that, I can get an idea of where music is needed. But where the rubber really meets the road is if I can get a video capture of the level that I'm going to be scoring, and then I can score it like I'm scoring a film. Mm-hmm. In a linear fashion, knowing that in a game, it's going to be interactive. So when I'm mixing, I can stem all the things out so that we can reuse and loop sections and then go to different areas. And then it goes to a different part of that piece of music and all depending on what the player is doing, right? So it's an interactive, immersive experience musically. Mm-hmm. And then there's an ebb and flow. There's rises and falls. There's action music, but there's also exploration music. There might be an emotional moment that we have to score. So all those things get scored out, and then we decide how that gets put in the game later on. That's kind of my process. It's like scoring a film where you do a spotting session, you sit down with the director, or in this case, the audio director, and we decide what type of music is going to go in this game, where it's going to happen, how long it's going to play, that kind of thing.
And with a game, to your point, because you've got these stems that lead on to these all these different options of what could play out in the game, the files or the piece of material that you're playing with must be absolutely massive. So how do you get your hands around that, and how do you share that and edit that and then also see it quite holistically as well?
So just technically speaking, when I'm mixing a piece of music for a game or for anything really, I have about 19 or 20 different stems. And those stems are orchestra, you know, strings long and short, and brass long and short, and woodwinds, and percussion, orchestral percussion, contemporary percussion, synthesizers, arpeggios, pads, all these different elements that go into making a piece of music all get stemmed out. So if I put in a digital audio workstation, all of those stems, it's the final mix. Sounds like the final mix. So the reason I do that is because, especially for games, there's different reasons. For television and film, you want to be able to have control over each individual element in case one is interfering with dialogue for film or television. But for games, you know, you're scoring basically maybe a 40-hour experience. You're not going to write 40 hours of music for a video game. You're going to write maybe 2 hours, and you're going to very creatively use those stems, use those mixes, so that you can stretch that 2 hours into that 40-hour experience.
Got it.
And it does it very well. And for example, where the full theme of whatever you're writing is playing, maybe later on you want to refer to that, but only with the string section. Or maybe you only want to have a pad that plays on it because it's more of a somber moment. You can reuse all of those elements in new ways through the whole thing, and yet it still relates to the music you've written. So it's very connected, and it seems like it all came from the same score. And even though you weren't specifically writing for that moment, you're using pieces of those stems or just moments inside that music to create a new musical experience.
That's amazing. And this wasn't going to be one of my questions, but as you talk, I can't help but ask it. Over the course of your career, have you seen the way that this music is built and the type of music that aligns against games really evolving quite significantly? The thing that came to mind was the early days of Mario, where the music would just go round and round and round and round. It's incredibly linear. I guess you've experienced that evolution. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. Back in 1993, the CD-ROM was invented, and it was included with every PC purchase. And that was a monumental shift in digital media and how it behaved in the world. So before that, you just didn't have any storage. You had those little floppy disks that could handle maybe a megabyte.
Yeah.
You know, 1.4 megabytes or 5 megabytes or something like that. Then you've got 750 megabytes to play with. And that changed everything. I remember the following year, the game Myst, M-Y-S-T, came out. That was the largest selling video game of all time. because it came OEM with every PC purchase. Mm-hmm. And everyone played that game back in 1994. That game changed everything. And that's when I got interested in video games, because I played that game and I said, hey, the music in this game is really amazing, you know? Mm. And if you listen to it now, I mean, I don't know if you know anything about synthesizers, but the Proteus synthesizer was the only musical instrument used in the making of that score. It was a polyphonic synthesizer. It had many voices that you could use simultaneously. And so the composer just used a Proteus to make this music. And it sounds pretty primitive by today's standards, but it was world-changing at the time. It really changed everyone's perception of what game music could be. Because you're right, before that it was bleeps and bloops, because all you have was these FM synthesizer cards inside either the consoles, or you had to have some sort of software engine playing in some PC or whatever. So it really changed everything. And from then on, it's just been refining the same process I've been using to score ever since 1995, when I first got into writing for games. It's all really the same process now. It's just everything sounds better and better. You know, you just get better quality of samples. Everything from any instrument you can play as a sample sounds better. You can record an orchestra on top of all that. Whatever you want to do, it's just the production pathway is pretty much the same ever since about, I would say, 2005, because between 95 and 2005, the game engines that have come out enable the game designer to create a full experience very quickly.
And in other professions, and certainly just in the field of work more generally, I think a lot of people have seen the pressure to increase their pace of work, to increase how much they're working. I think, particularly in the last year and a half or so, working in such a creative space like yourself, is that a change that is impacting you? And if so, what are you doing to manage your ownership of the creative process and to defend against perhaps pressure that you might have to produce quickly or when you need to produce right? Do you feel, is that even relevant?
I'm fortunate in that most of the clients that I work with, I've been working with for many years, and mm-hmm. we're very cognizant of quality comes when you're not rushed. They get me involved very early. So I never really feel particularly rushed. I mean, it does get intense, especially when it comes time to, oh, okay, we have to finish the score by this date, and we have to record. In order to do that, we have to record by this date, and you sort of work backwards from the ship date. And, you know, I'm very good at that. Like, I'm very good at time management. It's all about time management. I know lots of people who will, all they do is work. And I'm not that kind of person. I don't enjoy that. I feel like the work suffers. I don't enjoy it as much. So I do other things besides work. I'm very active outside. I like to be outside. I like to have a life outside of work. And I think that's very important for me. Other people will stay up all night and work. And I just stopped doing that about 20 years ago. I just stopped mm-hmm. doing that. I very rarely work past midnight because, you know, first of all,
I'm
older.
It still feels quite late.
Yeah, it is late.
You were going to say very rare thing. Past 7 then.
that's a rare thing. I usually don't work past 7 o'clock at night. And usually I have my nights free to do something else. But if I'm in a crunch situation, I will come back after dinner and work a few more hours. But that's pretty rare. It only happens when we do have things coming up and it's like, oh, I have a couple hours before I hit the hay. I might as well prep some scores for tomorrow, that kind of thing. But I'm not one of those people who thinks it's a macho thing to stay up late. And I just don't want to have any part of that anymore.
And what do you do to get yourself in a creative mood? I mean, are there some days when you're just not in it? How do you manage that?
Oh, absolutely. I think there's a couple of things I do. One is that, especially when you're starting a project, it's always hard to get started once you get a flow going, things start to, it's like revving up an engine, like you warming up an engine. You have to start slowly and then just ramp into it. And then you'll hit your stride somewhere a week or two in, and you, everything starts to flow a little bit better. In the beginning, I just give myself a little time to get into it, and I don't rush myself. I let the ideas come. I go for walks. I'm in my studio all the time, so it's like good to get out of the studio. One of the things I love to say is I love to take a shower. Taking a shower just kind of frees up the creative space, because you got that sort of white noise of the water in the background, and you can just think. And I always have my iPhone with me, and I use voice memo to put down ideas, and then I can come back to that and reference something, a starting place. I don't really usually have a problem with the blank page being this ominous thing where I don't know what to write. It sort of comes pretty easily to me because I trust my own instincts and my own taste, if you will. Really, when a client is paying me to write for them, they're paying for my taste more than anything else. Like, he's got taste. He knows what is good and what works and what doesn't. So I just trust that after all this time pretty well.
Yeah, amazing.
I think most people should learn to trust their own ideas about what something should be and just go with it. That's the quickest way to being productive, is just not to doubt yourself too much.
You know? That's really interesting. And with regards to being productive, well, first of all, what does productivity even mean to you?
Yeah, productivity is getting rid of all the stuff that distracts. If your goal is to get object A done today, then stop worrying about B, C, and D and the rest of it. Just focus on the one thing that you want to accomplish today. When I write for television, I may have 30 minutes of music to write in a week. So if I, let's say I have 7 days and I've got 21 minutes to write, that's 3 minutes a day. So once I'm done my 3 minutes in a day, I can let it go. So I'm incentivized to get 3 minutes done as fast as I can, because then I get the rest of my day free. That's how I break it up like that. And for a game, it might be, I have to get this level done next week. How many minutes do I have to write? How much do I have to get done per day? That is the best way for me to stay productive, because I have a goal. You stay goal oriented. I've got the 3 minutes. Once that's done and it's good and I like it, I can walk away and I can stop thinking about work. Because what that does, by not thinking about work and taking time away from work, it allows you to be more fresh the next day when you have to do it again. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'll say, all right, I got 21 minutes, but I don't want to work 2 days next week. So I only want to work 5 days, but I still have to get it. I have to get 21 minutes done in 5 days. So I just divide by five. That's a little over 4 minutes a day. So I can do that too. And that way I can have a couple of days off too. And then when you come in Monday morning or whatever after the weekend, then you're fresh and you're excited to do it again. Whereas if you're constantly working all the time, it becomes a bit of a chore and a job. I never feel like I have a job. I feel like I'm just doing something I enjoy doing. And the more I can keep it fun and fresh, the more productive I can be.
That is gold dust. It's so brilliant. That is so, thank you, Jack. I really appreciate that. And it's really interesting, because we talk to people who, like yourself, who are about standing in their field, and it's a very consistent message, but it's a message that is just not translating to the majority yet. And it would be wonderful to lead this revolution where people felt confident enough to just do their thing.
Do your thing, man. Just do it and trust it. Trust your instincts. They're not as bad as you think they are.
Amazing.
You know, it's funny. We will have a crunch mode in a television show at least once per season. They'll be late on delivering the show, but it still has to go out at the same time. So you may have 2 days to write 24 minutes of music. And so again, you just have to, okay, I've got to write a minute per hour for 12 hours, 2 days in a row. And you eat your lunch at your desk and you don't get up until that minute is done. And you print at the end of that hour, you print that cue. And you'll find at the end of the 2 days, say maybe 9 or 10 at night, you'll listen back to what you've done. And it's way better than you thought it was, even when you did it, because it's your first instinct. we tend to overanalyze ourselves. So it's a great exercise just to say, okay, I have to write 5 minutes in 5 hours, go. And then do that, and then the next day come in with fresh ears and take a listen, and you'll be surprised at how good it sounds. Just because you weren't judging your work, you were just doing your work.
Will you then go through an edit process on that again, or is that 1 minute final written?
And usually you'll have a day or two to do fixes, so you'll hand it in, they just need to hear it, and then they'll make notes, and then you can come back and address those notes. But yeah, it's just more about a deadline. You know, I was just talking about when you have a deadline like that, that's severe.
Yeah, what you should do.
Yeah, thinking, you just, again, the message is trust yourself and just chop it up into bite-sized bits that you can chew up and get it done.
So relevant to loads of freedom users who are writers.
Yeah, and absolutely.
Same, very translatable. So I really appreciate that. Jack, I am going to wrap it up there if that's okay with you, and just say,
that's
Jack,
great.
Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. You've been absolutely fantastic. I'm so inspired.
Thanks, Julie.
And, yeah, that. Really enjoyed talking to you. Thank you.
All right. Take care now.
Thank you for joining us on Freedom Matters. If you like what you hear, then subscribe on your favorite platform. And until next time, we wish you happy, healthy, and productive days.